Welcome to another episode of SharkBites.net, where we delve into issues of tech leadership in the public sector. Please consider subscribing wherever you get your podcasts or simply go to SharkBites.net. Here now is our host, Dr. Alan Shark, Executive Director of the Public Technology Institute, now a division of Fusion Learning Partners.
Hi there, everyone. This is Alan Shark, and welcome to another episode of SharkBites.net. You know, it's hard to believe, but we are in our fourth year. And we began with CompTIA when PTI was part of CompTIA for a bit of time. And it's very appropriate that we recognize not only the fact that we kind of began there and now are independent, we also had an interview that took place in September 2020. And I recently had the opportunity when I was at an ICMA conference, it's a really good conference on artificial intelligence in Boston. I got to meet Brad Riley, and he was the one that I interviewed from a company called CityBot, and it was just starting to become popularized. So Brad, welcome back to the program.
Alan, thank you so much. It's great to be back.
So, you know, you come from a family of politicians. I just want to remind people who, you know, don't have a way to go back 4 years. But you are really brought up with a family committed to public service. And I think this still continues to this day. You've got your JD and you got your MBA from international business. You've got the smarts, you've got the talent, and you've got a fascinating company called CityBot. So I would like to pick up where we were 4 years ago, when you were just starting, and I think we were kind of talking about chatbots. And I think your first rollout at the time was text. And then we started talking about the possibility of speech. And now here we are finding ourselves together in Boston 4 years later, and things have somewhat changed, right? Now we're living in the age of AI and all that. What has the journey been like in terms of taking a chatbot? Now, notice the year. This was really right before the pandemic when you first began. And so you had an opportunity to really apply this in real life, real fast, in real time. Continue the story, sir.
Yeah, I will. We have. So we started this work about 7.5 years ago. And, you know, so much has changed in AI since then. And when we were talking in 20, we had just launched our web chat system for the city of Arlington, Texas. We launched that in August of 20. And, you know, even from then until now, so much has changed. In August of 21, Alan, is when we started messing with GPT. It's called GPT at that time. And we spent almost two and a half years working with language models before we incorporated them into our product. And our product is, we are a multi-channel, multi-language chatbot platform that's specifically engineered for local government customer service. And we integrate it into the tech ecosystem of local governments to route the communications. But we spent, you know, a long time in these language models learning about them, but also asking the question, Alan, how do we make these suitable for government use? Because there are certain things about the language models in their pure form that don't make them suitable for government use, in our opinion, from an external facing standpoint. So a lot has happened. It's you know, we've grown a lot as a company, serving a lot of cities and counties around the country. And the technology is changing. And, you know, one of the challenges for a company that, you know, we're mission driven, our mission is to serve all residents, regardless of how much money they make, what their skin color looks like, and what language they speak, that every resident in every community deserves to have a high quality engagement and customer service experience with their local government. And the data is very clear. If you present that to residents, they will trust you more. And that's what their business, we're in the business in. And that's, you know, what I learned from my father, who was a 40-year mayor of Charleston, South Carolina, who built trust with the people. But, you know, the deploying these models, talking about voice, like It's enabled us to now move to the voice paradigm because our product is functioning at a very high level, in part because of how we've built the system, and in part because how much AI has developed, since you and I were talking 4 years ago.
Yeah, we were thinking voice was the big deal, now suddenly voice still is the big deal. I guess the reason why I'm so fascinated with what you do is that when people ask me, where is AI really occurring? And I think it's occurring in two places. One, in terms of personal use, how you and I can use this to enhance our own creativities, the tools, whether it be Grammar Check. As you know, I just have a new book out on artificial intelligence, and I openly admit on the cover, I used, artificial intelligence. I embraced it. I wrote it, but I had some help. I want to acknowledge that. So things have really changed. And one of the things that intrigues me is how we have moved from one format to another. So when I talk about AI, personal use, but where are the applications for, cities and counties, townships across the country? I've always believed, when you and I first met, that chatbots is probably the low-hangingest fruit there is, and probably the most visible and most productive. Probably music to your ears. But when we first talked, most of what people understood chatbot to be was basically traditional static FAQ databases. So you might have 30 canned answers based on the system understanding what the question might be, usually through text. But now you have something called dynamic responses. Explain what that means, because this is where AI really plays an important role.
That's right. It's so much easier for us to deploy these models too. And so what we do is we only use Allen government generated content in our knowledge base to generate these dynamic responses. And so what we're able to do, like in Denver, we just launched in the city and county in Denver, and primarily using their website as a knowledge base, we're answering 95% of the questions that are coming into the city and county of Denver, working with their 311 team. And the responses are dynamic in that, we're using content generated by government. So it sort of takes on the personality to a certain degree of just, how government content is. It's sort of a matter of fact approach at this point. But yeah, we can answer, we talk about local governments. All the questions that come into municipal court about missing your, if you missed your court date, or Parks and Rec and booking your child into the summer camps that the Parks and Rec department might be offering, or how you get a business license, how do you fix a pothole? All these extensive and expansive services that local governments provide, that the array of questions that come in, Alan, are so broad. And so now what we're able to do is really provide this one-stop shop approach to deliver these dynamic responses for all these questions that are coming into local government and creating these positive, digital experiences for the residents. And then we really help these governments, our metrics are around helping them serve more residents and saving so much time in doing so. And we go about this, Alan. Our resident profile is the resident that the local government's never heard from before. That, how do we bring more people into the fold of having positive experiences with their local government so that they will trust their government more? And that's, one of the reasons we added our multi-language feature. We're now in 71 languages. It's, That's part of this resident profiling, is how do we create safer space for the more diverse population of a community to get their individual needs met, and when they engage with local government, and not have it be codependent on an hour of the day or a phone call or, an in-person meeting, of course, just on their own time. And so that's what we're able to deliver now to really help these governments out in a big way.
So I have to ask, I mean, what is the big ask from local governments in terms of requirements? Are they looking for voice? like what we hear with ChatGPT, or they still feel more comfortable with text-based kind of communications?
I would say, we are most governments right now, they're more interested in the text-based communication
Yeah,
through
that's
the
what I would.
existing channels that they're currently engaging with their residents. And so we're available in text, message. We're on the local government website. We're about to add the social media channels, Alan, and also WhatsApp is the one that I'm most excited about. Are cities asking me about WhatsApp? No. But we're not a company that waits for market demand to build a product. We're a company with a mission, and that is to serve all residents. So as these local governments are talking about how to have more equity-based communications, if they're not talking about WhatsApp, they're not including an integral communication channel that all these local governments need to be talking about, because the whole world uses WhatsApp, including 52% of the population, the Latino population in our country. So what we're trying to do is make these channels available, and then the local governments can pick what they want. In our effort to try to help these governments connect to more people, in particular the ones that a lot of these local government services are directed towards lower income people. And it's like we talk to all these local governments, it's like, we put all this information out, but no one knows what we're doing. And it's just like, well, you have to take the next step. And you've got to grassroots market to these people, and then you've got to provide products that these people will be comfortable using. And so that's really, and so we've gotten that down now. And so because we've gotten that down, the corpus of our system, we can now transition to voice in the right way, using the right data based on the current system that we have in place, and turning on the voice, whether it's through a phone call, through an interaction online, or through Alexa or Google Home, or whatever the next smart speaker technologies are. We don't try to pick these winners. We just want to work with these channels that people are using
That's
every
really
day.
exciting. Brandon, one of the things that you said, and I want to make sure our listeners understand, you use the word you only are tapping the data within that local government. And I think this is something that gets lost when people talk about artificial intelligence. To me, I've always said, and you've heard me say this, that there really are two classifications. One is open systems and one is closed systems. And there's so much fear out there. We heard that in Boston. People are very, in some cases, afraid, and I think overly so. And to the extent it's holding things back, the technology's there, the use cases are there, and they're thinking of all these reasons why perhaps they shouldn't move forward. But an open system probably is something one has to be aware of. They're both great. They both serve different purposes. But the open system, I can ask ChatGPT, where'd you get this information? Sounds really good. It says from everywhere. Well, that's kind of scary to me. Closed system means, to the extent a government has reasonable control of its data and they've done a reasonable job in this day and age, most do. If they aren't, they're getting there. And so the information you're tapping from is basically clean. I think that's important. I wanted to make
It's
sure people understood that distinction.
that's right. It's hugely important. And it's publicly available content generated by government that goes into our knowledge base. And our customers are the gatekeeper of the content that goes into our knowledge base. We just draw a line, Alan, and that is, we'll never include non-government content in our knowledge base. We just won't. And that's why we work with these language models for over 2 years, because we had to get them suitable for government use. So what do we need to do? We had to create a closed system with, the data in is government created. We had to source everything. That's what these language models do not do in their pure form. Everything has to be sourced back to the government content,
Right.
A, so the resident can verify where the information is coming from, and B, if a resident's asking a question, do I need a permit to build a fence? Well, we'll give them the answer on if they do or don't, and then provide the link where they can go start their permit application. So it's like, How can we get a resident in and out of a government customer service experience, which includes a transaction with the local government that is an important revenue source to the local government
Right.
in the most effective way so that everyone's winning? And so we had to do that. And then, one thing about our product, we enable residents to report service requests like potholes and missed trash pickups and graffiti and broken streetlights, et cetera. And we ask for their contact information because these customer service systems need to know, for most service requests, who's reporting them. Sometimes they can be done anonymously. But so none of those exchanges through our product are exposed to any AI API. And that's just, it's all enclosed in our own system. And the data that we generate, Alan, is solely owned by our customer. So it's like, that's another thing. It's like the data cannot be owned by these third-party AI companies. They
That's
need
really,
to be owned by
yeah.
the local government. And so we ensure that, and we do not transfer our data, Alan, to any third party, period, end of conversation.
Perfect.
And
I'm
that's
glad.
just, yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad we had the chance to get that out because I think that's an important distinction. As I travel around and I hear all these concerns, what frustrates you the most? You've got a great team, you've got a great installed base. You got something that really works. It does incredible things, which I want to talk about. But what
Sure.
frustrates you the most in the in this local government space?
Well, I will say it goes back to something you mentioned earlier. It's the fear. It's not just that what we see pervasive in local government is a culture of fear that exists in the organization of local government, that employees are fearful of their jobs and of making mistakes that might show up in the newspaper. And it might cause the fear of losing the job. And so what does that mean in these organizations? Well, if you don't have strong leadership that lets these employees know, actually making a mistake is the best teaching methodology that there is. And when you make a mistake, I'm here as a leader to get your back. And so when you take these organizations that, fear is a strong emotion. It's a strong emotion that we oftentimes overreact to that causes us, in the case of moving forward, it makes that happen slower. And so that culture already exists. And then on top of that, you take, the media. It's much more interesting for media to write a story about something that's not working or something that happened with AI than it is to write an article about the good things that happened. So New York had an issue with a chatbot that they did, and they agreed they didn't take it down. And so now we're talking to all these city governments, and they're just like, well, we just want to make sure that what happens with you, with us and you, is never is what happened in New York. And it's just like, y'all, the way we've engineered our product, that will never happen. It'll never happen. And but we have to, it was hard enough as it is to get our early adopters. And then I think it's just battling this whole fear culture. I mean, you and I could at least have an interesting conversation on the lack of differences between the OpenAI API and the Google API. It is just culturally, we don't mind that Google knows all of our information. We don't mind that Facebook knows all of our information. We don't mind that Amazon knows our information. We're not culturally there yet with these AI models. And I know there's cases and things out there that, make you concerned about AI and, all that. But it's just if you engineer the product correctly, and like you said earlier, create a closed system. And then you control the data that is produced by these models and have it be retained in the hands of the government as it should be. Then you're checking the boxes of making it, no different from any other software product that is, trying to help a local government solve a problem. And that's where the conversation should begin. And I've heard you talk about it. It's like, well, What are we trying to do here? You know, in our case, we're trying to provide better customer service experiences for more residents because we know that helps build more trust. And like I said, I've watched my dad do that with the constituents of the city of Charleston. So I understand what that means. And
So,
so
go ahead,
we
I'm sorry.
just happen to deploy AI to solve a problem. But that's the problem we're solving for.
Yeah. No, I'm totally on board. I totally understand. I think you clarified that well. Have you ever had to turn down a customer, potential customer, because of the data quality? Because this would be true of anybody. And I remember once upon a time I was in a voice response company, and we were doing quite well until we realized that we were so dependent on data quality of the customer that all this so-called automation really didn't exist as we had thought or had been led to believe, that there was a lot of human intervention that required a human to step in that we couldn't pull from the data. Have you encountered it, or are the customers coming to you? They figure that out, and their data is pretty well established.
No, it's a great question. So, on the one extreme, you got Denver. So, the reason why we're answering 95% of the questions there is because of the intentionality that, I mean, it's been probably the greatest implementation we've had. And the team in the city and county of Denver are absolutely incredible. But it is because of the attention to detail that they put into the quality of their data, 100%. And then what will happen is, you know, we don't know. When we go into an implementation of our product, Alan, the quality of the data. So we start with the knowledge base that is a website, and we can turn around a demo environment for a particular city in about 6 minutes. And which is crazy, you know, it's just, and so what our experience has been when we're implementing with these local governments that we will help them uncover information on their website that should no longer be there. You know, it's like, oh, this blog from 2015 still on there about something that actually is, you know, inconsistent with what we're doing now. And so, you know, we've helped a lot of our customers clean up the data on their website by, as opposed to going like page by page on some of these websites have 5,000 plus pages, is taking a more resident-centric approach by asking the questions that we know residents are going to ask. And then we can help them clear out some of the extraneous data that does not no, that no longer needs to be on their website.
Data quality is a big issue. Our CIOs are always talking about it, and I always worry about a disconnect between their desire to automate certain processes and their ability to deliver, because they could be the weakest link, not your technology. AI and your technology, with or without it, depends on clean data and well-curated data. But I'd like to switch gears a little bit. The obvious use is anything to do with citizen engagement, citizen quality, citizen UX, CX, all those important terms. In fact, at the most recent PTI survey, the top three concerns was citizen engagement, citizen experience. We didn't hear that before COVID. And now I think people are really switching. So you're kind of in a good place right now. But I've looked at your website, and you mentioned something that I thought was interesting in terms of how your technology can play a role in disaster relief communications. And so this is something I thought is interesting because, once people realize what your systems can do, suddenly this is beyond 311. There's some other interesting, the technology is the same, but the application may be somewhat different. So what is your vision for how this could help with a DR plan, a communication plan?
I appreciate the question. So one of the things that we like to do with our customers is whether we're implementing or have launched or whatever, is actually go through a disaster scenario with them. So I'm from Charleston, South Carolina. Hurricanes are the major thing we worry about. I used to joke in California that they had everything but hurricanes. At least they didn't need to worry about hurricanes. And then they had one this past September, which was really crazy, and how much water it dumped down in the Palm Springs area. But so we like to get ahead of those things with our customer to understand what their emergency operations are in advance. And then a program around how do we make sure that the content that you're pushing out in real time gets captured into our platform. So I'll give you an example. So in New Orleans in 21, it was August 29th of 21, and this was 2.5 months after we launched our product with them that's branded as Jazz in New Orleans. And that's another thing we do. We want to brand these products to the local government as a brand extension of who they are. It's very important. And we actually build the marketing campaign, Alan, I don't know if you know this, for each of our customers to promote the system and community and get the residents associated with that brand. It's very important. You might have the best technology in the world, but if people don't know about it, they're not going to use it.
That's
So we
right.
work hard with our local government partners on that. So Hurricane Ida that hit in August 29, 21, it was one of these weird storms because, you know, normally we've got 5 days to prepare, you know, for a certain window of distance where the hurricane threat might come. Well, in the case of Ida, that wasn't the case. It was a tropical disturbance in the Gulf of Mexico. And then it formed over 2 days. It went from a disturbance to a Cat 5. And then the next day it hit New Orleans. So the city didn't have the normal, you know, plan ahead time and evacuate, you know, execute an evacuation program like we normally have for hurricanes. So one of the things that happened, so we had met with the city beforehand. And, you know, like when I was 16 years old, I ran the call center in the basement of the Charleston City Hall after Hurricane Hugo that hit in September 1989. And Oprah Winfrey had just come right after the storm to do a show with my dad, who was the mayor of Charleston at that time. And we set up this hotline. And after Oprah came to town, you know, the phone started ringing even more. But I've literally run these call centers before, and I understand what that's like. But anyway, so New Orleans, the storm hits. We track the city's social media because we're looking for content that we want to add to our chat greeting. So when someone engages the chat bot, we also want the customer to include information about what's relevant right now. You know, like take the question, well, what are residents calling about you right now? And if it's about a topic, well, let's put that content in the chat greeting. So we saw on social media that they had posted, if you see a down power line, call 911. And so we changed our greeting, and we only do it as a draft, and the customer approves it before I ever push it out. And so we put that in the greeting. If you see down power line, call 911. And we sent that to them, and they said, please do not put that out there. 911 has just gone out. No one expected that to happen. No one. So literally in that moment, their emergency communications were, if you're having an emergency, you need to go to your nearest police or fire station. Like literally going back in time. And then we realized, oh, we're the only communication channel, Alan, that's working right now. And so we immediately adjusted our product to an emergency product. So the greeting became content around if you need to get to a shelter, here are the 10 addresses where the shelters are. And if you need a free ride to get there, click this link, call this number. And the same was with oxygen tanks, you know, people on oxygen tanks, you know, and the power runs out. That's a major problem. So they set up four locations where residents could come get access to fresh oxygen tanks that had power and they could repower their existing ones. All that content. Meanwhile, they're setting up a web page on the recovery, and all that web content is getting, you know, pushed out second by second. And we can't wait for more than second by second to make sure that we're pulling that content into our system. So there's a lot of stuff that we do in the moment. We like to get ahead of these just so we know what the protocol is if we can. But it's just like we went through the Texas snowpocalypse of February 21. And, you know, other than the politicians that after the fact said, oh, he saw this coming, which is the typical politician speak. No one anticipated what a consistent level of cold weather, plus the power being out for so long, would have on the water systems in the state of Texas. So it turned into a drinking water crisis. And so we had a, we it's these are privileges. You know, there's no more privilege than we have of working with these customers where they something's going on. And so being able to participate with our Texas customers and helping to distribute free bottled water to residents who needed them, you know, this is the it's the work that we back into, but it's the work that we're experienced with, and it's the work that we want to be prepared for.
I'm glad I asked. This is great. I mean, everyone thinks of chatbots, and sometimes they think about it based on their own experience, 311, call centers of certain kinds. But I don't think too many people consider how this could be well integrated into a an emergency planning system to communicate vital information. And this is where text information is particularly helpful.
Absolutely.
You don't want to be verbalizing addresses. You can't memorize that. You can do a
Yeah.
screenshot of an address. You cannot do a screenshot of a voice. I mean, you could, but it's not going to be very meaningful.
Yeah. Well, the
Well,
other challenge we're seeing is particularly with counties, Alan, are non-emergency numbers that counties run that are staffed by their 911 call center. And these counties are struggling keeping you know what's in the seats in these call centers because it's one of the hardest jobs anyone can have
yes.
is answering a 911 call. And so, you know, what are considered non-emergencies are calls that do not immediately deploy a law enforcement or emergency vehicle, like, for example, a stolen bike or an animal-related issue, or I left my cell phone in the cop car last night. Or a welfare check on a neighbor because they haven't gotten out of their house in 5 days. Well, the 911 call takers should not be taking these calls. They
Agreed.
should be taking the emergency calls. So we are scoping out some systems with some of these larger cities and counties to help defray those non-emergency calls through into our system so that we can route those, you know, requests to where they need to go.
Perfect. We're going to have to leave it there, Brian. Every time I talk to you, I learn a lot. And so much has happened
Well,
in 4 years. I can't wait to have this conversation with you in another 2 years because I
thank
think things are expanding that quickly. But you got a fascinating product. You've got a wonderful team. You got a great installed base. And you got a technology that keeps growing every day. You know, I asked Alexa the other day, how old are you? And she said, 9. And when we think of some of the generations of stuff we're playing with today, it's like 3 or 4. So imagine what things are going to look like down the road. But I'm glad to know you. And this has been a great conversation. And it's always a pleasure to meet you either in person or virtually.
I so agree, and I just can't thank you enough for being a leader in this space and really trying to help these governments understand how useful this is and how important it is. Your voice is very important and it stands out because there are a lot of voices that are saying, be scared.
Yeah.
And so thank you so much for the role that you're playing in the
Well,
industry.
I appreciate it very much. And thank you for joining us. Wow, what a true visionary. Brant Riley, co-founder and CEO of Citybot. So, as we always conclude our podcasts, please be safe both digitally and personally. Until next time.
You've been listening to another episode of SharkBites.net. Please consider subscribing wherever you get your podcasts or simply go to SharkBites.net. And if you or someone you know has a story to tell, please let us know.